I'm going to talk a little bit about an article I'm trying to work on, tentatively called Sports Talk Radio in North American Apartheid. How many of you out there are avid sports talk radio listeners? As a separate from not that many? Okay. Yeah, I hear you. I understand why not. By 2042, according to United for Fair Economy, North America will be an official apartheid state where a white minority will lord over overwhelmingly existing wealth, income, land, natural resources, and the benefits produced by a majority black, brown, and otherwise world majority population. Already, and more particular to my focus here, according to Juan Gonzalez and Joe Torres, we already suffer an apartheid media system where only 7% of commercial radio and 3% of television stations nationally are owned by world majority populations. In other words, if you take all the so-called non-white people in this country, about 35% of the population, put them together, it's total about 10 to 12% of all commercial media ownership. And that, of course, does not account for their political perspective. So obviously, we have to look beyond just the color of someone's skin or their gender to achieve or to arrive at their political position. But that is the reality. And even if we look at the internet, less than 1% of internet-funded internet startups are black-owned. The recent report that came out in terms of the most heavily advertised and funded YouTube channels, 1%, the 90% are white and male, leaving everybody else to compete for the rest. So in other words, very quickly, the internet is not radically or drastically changing the relationship here. In 1913, James Sullivan, the U.S. Minister of the Dominican Republic, said, quote, "I deem it worthy of the department's notice that the American game of baseball is being played and supported here with great enthusiasm. The remarkable effect of this outlet for the animal spirits of the young men is that they are leaving the plazas where they were in the habit of congregating and talking about revolution and are resorting to the ball fields where they become wildly partisan, each for his favorite team. The importance of this new interest should not be minimized. It satisfies a craving in the nature of people for exciting conflict and is the real substitute for the contest in the hillsides with rifles. If it could be fostered and made important by a league of teams, it would be one factor in the salvation of the nation." This, end quote, by the way. This, as I would argue, is the intended political function of sport within the context of imperial or colonizing relationships. Sports talk radio is merely a specific subset of a media environment itself designed to uphold existing social relationships. Today, there are many euphemisms selected to describe those social relationships, none more appropriate than internal or domestic colonialism. In this context, sports talk radio performed the role once described of Radio Alger in French colonial Algeria by Frantz Fanon, that is, to reassure the correctness of white colonial settler rule. The two radio stations in Washington, D.C.'s market that are my specific focus, 106.7 The Fan, CBS Radio, and 980 AM, ESPN-powered local affiliate sports talk radio, are corporate entities whose producers are equally white, as are their corporate parent owners, and where the only on-air talent or on-air black talent are former professional athletes who number in three total between the two stations. Sports talk radio is the single most listened to format by black men between ages of 35 to 54, according to the latest Arbitron study of black radio. To the extent that this is true, my own tendency to listen to so much of it is at least partially explained by this overall popularity among my demographic cohort. And anyone who listens to sports talk radio at all, knows just how white, male, and conservative an environment it is. Hence why some of you have said you stopped listening. Very good. We should talk about that. Yeah, very good, very good. In fact, as much as I listen, I know to turn the dial as soon as the conversation leaves sports proper, because despite the necessity of politics, race, class, and history to any discussion of sports, these usually, on sports talk radio, descend into softcore, racist, white male rants against the lesser black beings making so much money and often breaking those stern morals exhibited by those in sports journalism. But every once in a while, the twice-a-day correctness of the broken clock of commercial radio gets real exciting and even revelatory. Central to my own, to this developing work is this incident that took place 2 years ago, which was really fantastic. It was one of those rare moments in commercial radio where I just wished it would have gone on and on forever. 2 years ago, there was a great on-air exchange between white sports radio host and journalist Mike Wise, who's also a writer for the Washington Post, and the black DC native and sports journalist Harold Bell. It was hostile, it was aggressive, it was great radio. And it was also another shining example of this country's continuing imposed racial exclusion and separateness. It is, of course, no surprise that this happened in the nation's capital, the city that is still referred to as a colony, as a plantation, whose politics and media environment has been compared to that of any traditional colony. Recent study, I don't know if you all are familiar with Washington, D.C., it was one of the most highly segregated cities, 16th Street forming the new barrier. One side is becoming overwhelmingly white and affluent, the other side, to the extent that black people are left allowed to be in the city, is very poor and largely disenfranchised. It was an argument that speaks to the apartheid nature of the country itself and the almost total disconnect that exists between black and white America, the kind of disconnect that exists between any who are colonized and those who are colonizing them. Always near the settler is the colonized, near and essential to the well-being of the colonizer, but never with the colonizer. On its surface, the argument, which even for commercial sports radio had become quite heated, started when Bell was invited on the Mike Wise Show to discuss his recent article in which he truly took down a legend. Bell's target that day was John Thompson, the now retired head coach of Georgetown University and the current host on, or at the time that I wrote this, a former host on this very radio station himself. In the long piece filled with black insider DC sports and media history, Bell's views were summarized in his claim that Thompson's, quote, secret to success is his being black, is being big and black, his use of profanity and the race card to successfully intimidate his players and white folks, end quote. By the way, this is very hard for me to listen to or to read, because in the 80s growing up, you know, in the area, John Thompson is still, you know, the hero, you know what I mean? So I'm not getting into, well, let me just finish the theme. But it was difficult. However, Thompson, said Bell, fabricated and took advantage of racist acts and then used them to solidify himself as an anti-racist crusader and leader of black people and all humanity. Oh, by the way, for those who don't know, John Thompson, yeah, he said big and black. I just want to make sure that was made clear for anybody who didn't know. But, said Bell, none of this was real. And those who know black DC know better, from former players to mainstays in the sports, media, and political world. Mike Wise and his white colleagues were incensed. They defended Thompson and dismissed Bell as a fraud. They defended Thompson as one would expect if, in fact, Bell's accusations were correct. White men defending their validating native, their accepted super Negro, the one who justifies and even appeases the current relationship. This was what Fanon meant by the role of radio in a colony. Its purpose is to satiate the settler and make settlement acceptable. This requires preferred visions or versions of the colonized. And here was Bell, a native Washingtonian, black, irreverent, well-credentialed in his community, if not in the establishment halls of sports radio, alerting the very white Mike Wise to a history of black DC of Bell's own pioneering sports radio work, which prefigured the current format that now spoke against Bell viciously, as any colonizer's media must. But mostly, Bell was reminding his white antagonists of their real worst nightmare, that not every native loves the natives you've chosen us to love. So colonialism as a setting for my work is based on a number of different things. I won't go too much into it, but there's a long theoretical tradition that uses internal colonialism, which I argue and others have done well before me, is meant most specifically to return African America or African people in the United States to the world stage and stop separating the black experience here with all its particularities and nuances from the global experience of colonization, imperialism, enslavement, and so on. But it also establishes a patterned relationship between this internally colonized black nation and a dominant white American mother country. For Fanon, in this context, and I would agree, Colonized masculinity is emasculated and feminized as a defense mechanism. And if anybody's ever interested, there's, you know, in Walter Lippmann's classic work, and for those of us in media studies at least, in public opinion, he has a section on stereotyping as a self-defense mechanism. And he even talks about the necessity of white society to depict black people in a negative light, not because black people, or not to just demean black people, but to reaffirm their own dominance. So this is why, of course, when James Baldwin said, you know, I don't get mad when somebody calls me a nigger, I just ask you why you need me to be a nigger, because if I'm not the nigger you think I am, you're not the white man you say you are, and then everything about you collapses. A couple points here from Fanon on sports that I think are also extremely relevant to this discussion, and then I'll come back more specifically to the radio environment that I'm dealing with. He and others who have written about Fanon talking in his work on sports is that sport is a key site of pleasure and domination via a complex dialectic that does not always produce a clear synthesis from the clash of opposing camps. It involves both the imposition of authority from above and the joy of autonomy from below. It exemplifies the exploitation of labor process even as it delivers autotelic pleasures. Fanon and the colonized other talks about sports being the location where self-concept is played out via the other, the savage intellectual, control and subordination, submission and dominance. As another scholar suggests, colonialism had configured the colonized masculinity as feminized and emasculated and concluded that men in the colony had to reconstruct their manhood and their freedom through the rejection of colonial images, but primarily through sport, as that initial quote was meant to suggest. We don't want them actually picking up guns and rebelling. We want them taking all that energy and putting it on the field, but only in competition with one another and competition against one another for our reward. And as some of the presenters said earlier on the panel this afternoon, that was part of the process that was going on here. You're forced into competition at a very early age against one another, and those that the dominant sports complex deem are worthy are plucked out of the colonial situation, rewarded relative to their continued performance and their continued adherence to non-political activity. Fanon himself demonstrates the centrality of sport, and the black athlete in particular, as a discursive field where the fantasies are most clearly projected. When Fanon gives his white patients a word association test, it is significant to note how often these respondents mention either sports or prominent black athletes of the period. By the way, this is the same kind of thing goes on to this day. Blackness is often associated, as we just saw, in part of a great presentation a moment ago, as hyper-masculine, violent. And if you listen to white sports radio, and by the way, there's a point I wanted to make also very quickly, that there's obviously a difference of effect between listening and watching something or reading something. McLuhan, forgive me, but the medium is indeed the message in this instance, right? So when you're hearing white men who often welcome their own history as being affluent, middle class, talking about black men from a wildly different background, you can hear it in their discussion. And I think I'm running out of time, so I won't. Let me just skip a little bit ahead here. So you have affluent white men discussing, controlling, defining what is acceptable behavior. This is what was coming out in that beef with Harold Bell, and you also hear it. Well, most notably recently, in terms of whenever there's any kind of racial incident, when the brother was talking about RG3 and not being black enough and all this other stuff, it was wild to then go onto sports talk radio and hear white men from wildly different backgrounds discussing black men talking about who was authentically black in a very demeaning way, by the way, very, very dismissive way. There's also a portion that I wanted to talk about here in terms of you can hear who is the target audience via the advertising. When you hear Movis Diamonds and they're offering $5,000 trips to South Africa to visit the diamond mines, it's clear who they're targeting as an audience. And if we got into the discussion about the issues of radio and advertising and commercial advertising on radio, particularly radio that targets black audiences, these corporations have willfully and consciously and publicly said we're not advertising there. So it's very obvious that their main audience is clearly affluent, white, and overwhelmingly male, despite having a huge black audience by percentage of listenership. There's also the constant issue of patriotism. I've been listening just since the incident in Boston, and regardless of what is said to have gone on or who's said to have done what, it is just a constant reminder that we must be patriotic. Everything, you know, there can be no question of anything. They even say, we're not going to talk about the politics, just thank God for Boston and thank God for the people in Boston and wave your American flags. And, you know, so they're saying we're not talking about politics, but then giving you obviously a very political response. Then on one of the shows that I listened to, Steve Zabin and Andy Poland are co-hosts, and it's literally the radio version of the old Hannity and Combs show, where you have the Republican and the fake liberal who's not really in opposition, but they present themselves as opposition so it doesn't confuse anybody. And very lastly, because I know I'm out of time, I just wanted to borrow a piece from this book that I'm finding wildly fascinating. I don't know if any of you, probably some of you are familiar with this, Ben Carrington's Race, Sport, and Politics, The Sporting Black Diaspora. And in this one section, he recounts the tragic and horrifying opening from Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, about the boxing ring and the Battle Royale, exactly. So imagine that he's just reprinted that before I'm going to read to you, and then I'll end here what I'm arguing is going on, even in the context of sports talk radio. He says, after you've read that intro, when you see about the boys and the arousal from the women and then the electrocution from the fighting of the coins and this and that, he says, we might also perhaps read this terrible scene as a somewhat pessimistic allegory for the fate of the black athlete in the world of modern sports. The black boys are given a chance to win their freedom within the circumscribed sporting arena. They have a degree of agency for sure, but this comes at the expense of dominating each other. In the end, the physical strength of the strongest and toughest of the boys counts for little. Real power, we are aware, lies outside the ring among the onlookers and the patrons. The black boys' blows serve only to knock each other out for the amusement of the white audience. Their own subjective violence towards each other serves in the end to both reproduce and therefore disguise the objective forms of violence inherent within the system of white supremacist capitalist patriarchy, or what I'm just simply calling internal colonialism. We are left with little doubt that anyone trapped for any length of time in such an environment of forbidden racialized sexual arousal, of physical assault and racial abuse, of false promises of freedom, and the denial of humanity would surely and eventually go mad. And then I'll just add very lastly in conclusion, the recent comments from Kellen Winslow when he was asked about the father, that is, senior, asked about his post-professional football career and the rest of his life. And he basically, in fact, I believe this is a direct quote, he said, I just went back to being a regular nigger. And I'll stop there. Thank you very much.